And the milk was so different that it was my mom's vision to say, everybody needs to know where their food comes from, or everybody deserves the right to know where their food comes from. And she wanted to tell people the story of sustainable agriculture and humane animal husbandry through a dairy product.
Cheese is delicious. And whether it's grilled, shredded, or in cottage form, cheese gives us the calcium and nutrients that make our body strong. And all of that goodness starts with the cows. I came from the mud. There's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree. There's roots where I stand. I'm David Zelsky, and this is the Fork in the Road podcast, presented by Georgia Grown and the fine folks at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Each episode, we feature stories from Georgia's farmers, fishermen, merchants, artisans, chefs, and others who help provide Georgia-grown products to folks in the Peach State and beyond. Today, we are in Thomasville, Georgia, 43 miles west of Valdosta, to visit Sweetgrass Dairy. This is where milk turns to cheese in award-winning fashion. Here they use art and science to make exceptional handcrafted cheeses using only the milk from cows raised on their pasture. Their cheeses have earned many accolades, including awards from Southern Living and the American Cheese Society. Yes, that is a thing. Jessica Little is one of the co-owners of Sweetgrass Dairy. I spent the day on one of her family's farms and traveled to their cheese production facility to learn all about how cheese goes from udder to fondue.
So we are here in Brooks County, Georgia, at one of my parents' three farms. This is called Grassy Flats Dairy. And we make cheese at Sweetgrass Dairy from only my family's farm's milk. So what makes us so special is that our cows live their entire lives, 365 days a year, out on grass. And it just gives a really unique flavor profile that we think is a little bit different and unique for our industry.
The folks at Sweetgrass Dairy are cheese industry innovators in more ways than one. And it all started with Jessica's parents.
My parents, actually, my dad is a fourth-generation dairy farmer, and he met my mom at the University of Georgia, go Dogs, and they both were in the pre-vet program, and they ended up with degrees in animal science and decided to work on a dairy. A job right out of college would be a herdsman or a dairy manager position. And that was in the early 80s, and they farmed in a conventional style, the way that universities teach farmers how to farm, because dairy farmers are paid on volume and really pushing the cows for maximum production. They were winning all kinds of awards for their milk volume, but their quality of life, you know, they started realizing that bigger wasn't necessarily better.
After learning about a method from the other side of the world, Jessica's father began to rethink how their farm was raising cattle.
My dad went to a conference that was taught by a New Zealand dairy farmer about rotational grazing in 1992. And he came back and he said to my mom, why in the world do we live in this area that we can grow grass almost year round? We have unlimited water and very mild winters. Why in the world are we growing all of these grains and bringing them to the cows? Why don't we just let the cows out to graze? So in 1993, their first New Zealand rotational grazing style dairy called Green Hill Dairy was born. She started making yogurt and butter and ice cream and cheese. And by far, cheese was the most scientific and artistic at the same time. And so she settled on cheese. And we kind of joke that it's really great that she didn't do a feasibility study, because we're the first cheesemakers in Georgia.
Wait, Jessica, say that again.
The first cheesemakers in Georgia.
Yep, you heard that right. The folks at Sweetgrass Dairy are the first cheesemakers in Georgia. And Jessica explains that even though it may have been considered quite a risk at the time, her mother really believed in her own cheesy vision.
I don't think that anybody would have said this was a good idea. You know, we're in an unproven industry in an area that didn't have a long history of cheesemaking. But she just knew it. Like, she had to tell people this story. So in December of 2000, she started selling cheese just locally out of a little tiny cheese shop. And my husband and I were living in Atlanta. I was finishing up my, we weren't married yet, but I was finishing up my degree in marketing. We were both working in restaurants. So I was starting to take cheese around to chefs. And they were saying, oh my gosh, we've been waiting for you. And it wasn't specifically me, it was just somebody making cheese locally. So there was a lot of excitement right out of the gate. And within a year, Jeremy and I decided to move back to be a part of this cheese program. We thought maybe we'll stay a couple years just to be a part of it. And by 2005, we had bought the creamery. And I'm so thankful that my parents are such outside of the box risk takers and really just following their hearts, knowing that they want to provide people with really high quality foodstuffs and telling the story of this region, what makes it special.
A toxic fire, a plume of smoke, and a community demanding answers. In Conyers, Georgia, the biolab disaster left residents searching for truth and accountability. This season, GPB uncovers system failures, hears from whistleblowers, and follows neighbors still fighting to be heard. I'm Pamela Kirkland. Join me for season 2 of Manufacturing Danger, the Biolab Story. Listen now at gpb.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jessica's parents, Al and Desiree Wehner, really got the cheese ball rolling for the family. For the Wehners, dairy farming is a multi-generational profession, one that Jessica hopes to pass on to her kids one day.
I have 2 brothers, and one of them is now slowly taking over for my parents. He is a partner in the dairy industry. His name is Clay, and he is now the 5th generation in our family to dairy farm. And we want to be able to provide future opportunities in case any of our kids want to also be dairy farmers.
And as the daughter of risk-taking parents, Jessica also likes to think outside of the box to solve problems. This was the spark behind their restaurant, Sweetgrass Cheese Shop, located in the heart of downtown Thomasville.
Order up!
So we were living in Thomasville, Jeremy and I, making cheese, but we were selling cheese further and further away. There was chefs from New York and Dallas and Chicago and San Francisco that wanted this very unique tasting cheese. We were starting to win a lot of awards, and it was very difficult because it felt like we were just sending our cheese further and further away. And we wanted to really get back to have roots in our community and, you know, create a place where we wanted to go and eat. So in 2010, we opened the cheese shop, which is a labor of love. We call it a cheese shop, but over the years it has morphed into a full service restaurant and a full bar and all of the delightful challenges of running a restaurant. But it's really great because it's in the downtown historic part of Thomasville. We feel really closely tied, you know, to our community and giving people that experience, you know, in the right downtown.
Jessica and Jeremy's service industry roots come in handy at Sweetgrass Cheese Shop, and it also keeps them connected to their community. Back on the pasture at Grassy Flats Dairy, one of the farms operated by Jessica and her family, there are cows almost as far as the eyes can see.
And my brother starts his day every day by walking these pastures. So he only knows the next 3 pastures where the cows are gonna be. Each of the farms are at least 350 acres and they are divided up into 5-acre paddocks. So it's kind of hard to see, but each of these paddocks, there's just one little tiny wire that is keeping the cows in this area.
Here on the farm, they utilize rotational grazing to make sure the cows get the best quality grass they can. Sweetgrass Dairy, y'all, it's in the name.
But the goal here is that the cows are going to eat the most nutritious part of the grass. So you don't want them to graze too close to the ground where they might compact the soil too much or have potential parasite problems. Or you don't want the grass to grow too tall where it might seed out and be too fibrous. You really want that most nutritious part. However, like you said, we do have seasons in Georgia and we have a summer crop and a winter crop. And usually, depending on the weather, we switch from the winter crop to the summer crop in early May. And we switch to the wintertime crop in late October. And so we right now are in one of our lower periods of grass where we're in that transitional period.
These cows get free rein to walk around the pasture and graze at their leisure, but keeping high quality grass growing throughout the seasons is not without its challenges.
We don't have any barns for our cows. They do spend all of their lives out here, but our big challenge is trying to grow grass in the really extreme heat. And we do this by keeping our cows cool with an irrigation system. We sit on top of the 2nd largest aquifer in the nation, the Floridan Aquifer. That not only keeps our cows cool, but also helps us grow grass.
For Sweetgrass Dairy, the diversity of grass grown on their pastures is one of the things that creates the flavor profile of their cheese and makes it a hit with chefs.
My dad has worked a lot with the University of Georgia, Dr. Dennis Hancock, who wrote the book literally on Southern forages, and he has visited so many times over the years. And will say at any given time, he has not ever witnessed less than 4 to 5 species in both winter and summer. So although it looks like a monocrop, we are getting crimson clover and cowpeas, ryegrass and oats in the winter, and then we're getting summer clover, Bermuda, Bahia, and crabgrass in the summer. So the diversity of grasses, along with the organic matter that is being built every single year, leads to more diversity and more microbiological life in the soil, which turns into more flavor in the milk and ultimately in cheese.
Now, keeping cows unconfined is another important factor in making this cheese.
What we have found when my dad first started farming this way, he was doing it because he knew it was better for the earth, but it was really way better for the cows. The average lifespan of a cow in a conventional system is only 2 to 3 lactations before they just cannot keep up with the demands. It's just a really hard farming style on them. Whereas on pasture, Cornell did a study on any ruminant animal, so goat, sheep, buffalo, cows, if they live out on pasture, they live 3 to 4 times longer, and we are seeing that in our herd. So we have a lot of really old cows because we just do not push them for maximum production.
This method of farming also makes a far-reaching positive impact on the planet.
But because of that, the cows living out here on the soil, they are putting organic matter back into the soil, and we are seeing that this farming method is really regenerative, and it's helping combat the effects of climate change and global warming. So now we know so much more, and it's really exciting because every single year we're measuring about 1/3% more of organic matter. So it's holding in the water and inviting more biodiversity here in the soils for a more inclusive system overall.
These cows have been specifically bred to be perfectly adaptable to Georgia's climate. So please, no jokes about their looks.
Yeah, so I always tell people when they come out here, don't judge a book by its cover, because our cows are truly cows that have been developed to work in our system. They are not going to win any beauty pageants. However, I think they're quite beautiful.
They are beautiful in their special kind of way. In the Sweetgrass Dairy pasture, in addition to the diversity of grass, there's also a diversity of cow breeds. This is another factor that explains the amazing and unique flavor of Sweetgrass Dairy cheese.
My dad has seen over the last 25 years that he needs to have a cow that's roughly 1,200 pounds. So a Holstein cow, the big black and white ones, are roughly 2,000 pounds, whereas a Jersey, a purebred Jersey, might only be 900 pounds. So he needs a cow big enough that can produce enough milk, because this is a business, to be sustainable, but a cow that's not too big, that can handle the heat, that's not going to compact the soil so much. So all the cows that you see are at least 50% Jersey, if not more. But there's a lot of crossbreeding in here. So we've got some New Zealand Friesian, some Ashire, some Norwegian Red. There's even some beef breeds like Cinnipol and Limousine to help combat the heat. So this is a very long-term project that my parents are trying to help develop cows that work in this region on these soils. So they wouldn't do well in Vermont. It might take them a little while to adapt, or Wisconsin.
In 2021, Sweetgrass Dairy cut the ribbon on a new 12,500 square foot facility, which tripled its production capacity. I visited the facility and got a tour from Jessica's husband, Sweetgrass Dairy co-owner Jeremy Little. And according to Jeremy, this facility is a great improvement from their old one.
At the end of the run at the other facility, we had 3 tanks, and they were all different sizes and shapes, so they required a lot of ingenuity as far as getting product moved around. Now we just have 1 location.
The milk tanks at this facility allow both for faster production and a higher quantity of milk.
So this guy will hold something like 80,000 pounds of milk, which is like a truckload and a half. But basically what we've been doing is getting about a truckload, which at the other facility at peak production, we were doing about a half a truckload.
First on our cheese production facility tour, I got to see milk in its rawest form. At least the rawest from outside of the udder.
all of the milk in this room, inside of this room, is raw milk. So this is the biggest contamination concern is right in here. And so that's why there's a separate door, a separate entrance. You know, the idea is just that we're trying to keep it contained in here. This panel that you see here is the control panel for our HTSD, which stands for high temperature, short time pasteurizer. And what it allows us to do is heat treat and pasteurize the milk in a much more gentle fashion. So instead of it taking an hour or longer for the milk to be treated before it gets ready for production, once the HTST gets moving, the milk is only heated up and cooled down for a period of about 15 to 20 seconds. So it's way more gentle on the milk itself. So consequently, we're seeing better flavor development. We're seeing better yields. It's just a better way to do what we were doing anyway, but in a new facility.
Before the pasteurization process, milk goes through a different process called standardization. This is when the fat content is determined. And a user-friendly computer interface makes this part a breeze.
Basically, what we have the ability to do is we can pick a product, we can pick the fat percentage. So that means that we can either lower the fat if we want to, or we can inject cream to increase the fat if we want to do that too. We can adjust the pasteurization temperature for the pasteurized cheeses. And then, as always, we've always had the ability to change the outlet temperature.
It's a busy day at the cheese factory. Even though it's not even lunchtime, they've already got one batch of cheese in the can. Cheese in a can.
Are you getting ready to go over?
I'm just waiting for it to stay and hit the plate.
Okay, so Marcus is actually in the process right now where he's getting ready to transfer the second round of milk for the day. So now it's, what is it? Is it really 11:30? So it's a little after 11. And we've already finished one batch of cheese for the day.
After the standardization and pasteurization process, the milk gets transferred into large stainless steel vats called agitators. There, starter cultures are added, and aerated steel paddles churn the milk to create cheese curds.
We're filling up the vat for the second round of the day, but anything that happens to the milk will happen right here. So the culture gets added, the curd will be created from the coagulant, and then the paddles will stir to manipulate the texture, whatever it is that we're looking for.
Back in the pasture, Jessica gave me a rundown of how the different cheese types are made.
You only need four ingredients, and you can make hundreds of different styles of cheese. So it's milk, salt, rennet, and cultures.
Rennet, another crucial part of cheese production, is a complex set of enzymes found in the stomachs of unweaned ruminant animals such as cattle, sheep, and goats, among others. Adding rennet and starter cultures to milk causes a chemical reaction which separates the milk into cheese curds and liquid whey. And here's a side note. Curds and whey, Little Miss Muffet's little dish of choice, can be found at your local grocery store under the name cottage cheese.
All the different cheeses are, you manipulate one little tiny element and it can have long, you know, big effects. So the temperature in which you heat the milk up, how much culture you add, what does the acidification curve look like? So for instance, with a cheddar, you want a really high acidity or a sharpness to it.
Right.
So you're gonna build that acidification curve and then press those curds and get as much whey out, and then you cut them all up. There's a whole process of cheddaring that is really unique. Versus something like Thomasville Tome, so it's uncooked, unpressed. We want to keep as much of that whey and creaminess in there as possible. So it really does, the cheese is equally artistic and scientific at the same time. And they're all recipes from changes of culture and changes of technique can have widespread changes in texture and flavor.
Beautiful. That's a good answer.
Back at the cheese vat, Jeremy and I watch the paddles churn the milk mixture to form delicious cheese curds.
So here's the milk that's coming over that we just saw Marcos programming into the HTST. It's our new cheese vat. I love how quiet it is. In the other facility, this was one of the louder noises that you heard in the production room. And over here, it's got this kind of serenity to it, which is very unusual. Usually with the agitators, they're pretty clunky. But with these, this is a vat that was designed by Neville McNaughton in Sanitary Design Industries, which is in the Midwest. Just the the way it's designed, it's very, very safe, but it's also very, very cheese friendly.
After the milk is agitated into curds,
once it's ready to go, we will hook this pump up, which is right behind me. The pump gets hooked up to the big valve, and then it gets transferred over to this guy that you see behind us. So this is called the curd chute.
The next step is shaping the cheese curds into block formations, like the ones you see at the store. At Sweetgrass Dairy, they use molds to make uniform shapes.
Cheese is kind of a domino effect. So once the process is ready, we want to try to get it in the same condition that it was in the vat into the molds as quickly as possible. And so when we're doing it by hand, if it's a larger batch, that becomes cumbersome and difficult because you got manual labor that's trying to get 800 gallons worth of curd into block forms. So what we do is we push the curd in the way through this lobe pump. The hose gets connected to the back of the curd chute here. And then what happens is it fills up and then it basically falls over the waterfalls here.
And what happens next is something I like to call cheese Jenga. But in this game, everyone wins.
These guys will get stacked together and then it looks like this. So this is a flavored cheese that we made called Cypress that we made this morning. But basically the stack turner allows us to flip all the cheeses as a group and not individually like we used to have to do. Hey Sean, can you flip this so that David can see you do it? So basically there's 50 cheeses right there. Sean just flipped them all, you know, as you saw in a couple seconds. Whereas previously it all had to be done by hand, and consequently, sometimes the molds wouldn't get sealed onto the table and you'd end up with challenges. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 stacks. Carlos is pulling the cheeses out of the brine right now. As you see, cheeses get brined for around 30 minutes. We've been kind of playing with that to try to figure out the target salt content here in the new facility.
Next stop on the milk's journey to cheese is the salting room.
Bet you can't guess what happens there.
You know, the salt that goes on the outside, it helps to propagate rind development. So the salt gets put on the outside, the salt pulls moisture out of the wheel itself, and that moisture that is brought to the surface is actually food for the organisms that propagate the rind. So we get that process started, and then this room is actually less humid, and it's also warmer temperature-wise. So it's a better aging starter, if you will, before it gets into the other rooms. When Pat and I have discussed, we try to leave them in here at, what do we do, Pat? 4 or 5 days, mostly?
Yeah.
Usually we try to do 4 or 5 days to try to get them extra time to dry out. What Pat's doing right now, Pat's vacuum sealing tome for pimento cheese. So this cheese has already been salted on both sides, and now he's putting vacuum bags on them so that he can take them into the other room and seal them, which is where they spend the rest of their life cycle before they get used for pimento cheese tome.
And the last stop is the aging room. This is where the rind propagation is the name of the game.
This is another thing that we put a whole bunch of investment into is the aging space. That the room conditions are extremely controllable in many ways. The cheeses, as you can see, the rind development is pretty awesomely consistent, which is a good indication of the conditions in this room being very stable.
The cheeses from Sweetgrass Dairy are all the results of thoughtful experimentation, and they're always trying to think forward in terms of cheese innovation.
Griffin is, as far as product development goes, it's on the newer spectrum of cheeses that we've made. We've probably been making it for 3 or 4 years. It's gone through several different iterations, but it's where it's at right now and where we like it, I would say. We wanted to create kind of an English-style cheddar that had more beer flavor.
At Sweetgrass Dairy, they try to maintain the quality of their products by using the best possible ingredients without passing the cost on to the customer.
Terminus Porter is a beer that we use to wash the curds internally during the production process, but then can't necessarily make a more expensive product, but we want to use beer, we want to use great beer. So how do we do that? And so the idea was that even though the cost of the batch was going to be more expensive with the addition of beer, we're going to try to target a smaller wheel size so that the cost to the consumer wasn't necessarily more than the other products. And so the beer wash is what you can see on these cheeses right now has been done. That's where that sort of darker, sort of amberish color is coming from. So there's beer in the vat, in the curds, when the cheese is made, and then it gets vacuum sealed. And then once it comes out of the bag, it gets beer added also. But that vacuum bag sealing action is how we get that closed texture or that closed paste that would resemble what you would normally do with a cheddar style, which would be pressing the curd. We didn't have the ability to press small wheels, so that's how we had to get a little bit creative to try to solve that problem.
Creative problem solving. There's nothing cheesy about that. And any problem where it's just more beer is the solution is okay by me.
Full keg gets added to every batch.
I'm glad I got to spend some time learning about cheese from Jessica and Jeremy at Sweetgrass Dairy. From cow to curd, the cheese-making process is a fascinating one. And there's endless factors that determine the texture, consistency, and flavor profile of the cheese we enjoy every day. So next time you make a charcuterie board, be sure to thank a cheesemaker. And of course, a cow. For more stories like this one, you can watch A Fork in the Road on GPB TV or anytime on the GPB.org website. That's where you'll also be able to listen to and subscribe to this podcast or download it on your favorite podcast platform. I'm David Zelsky. Thanks for listening to A Fork in the Road.